I'm Brandi Cruz. We've got a jam-packed show for you today on Undivided. First, a second election observer in Island County, Washington, is being threatened with felony charges. She'll join us. Plus, the Tumwater Teachers Union put out a post denouncing hate after a teenage basketball player in the district refused to play against a biological boy. And maybe the only time I'll ever agree with Seattle leftists, appointing Dow Constantine as the CEO of Sound Transit would be cronyism at its worst. That and much, much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Holy smokes, we got a lot to get to today. Some great exclusives on the show as well. First, we want to start with a story we broke last week, and it's been gaining national attention, as it should, over the weekend and ever since. And there's a follow-up today that we're also going to break on this. But first, let me do a quick reset for folks who weren't familiar. So back in November in Island County, Washington, the auditor there put down a mandate as ballot counting was happening for the November election that observers and ballot counters had to be masked in that room. That was the decision that the auditor had made. There had been some sort of outbreak of COVID previously in the ballot room. And so she thought masking was going to do the trick. And that's 2024. So of course, you know, we're far beyond the point of masking. And Republicans in particular in Island County had a problem with it. And they felt like it was a rule that was going to unfairly impact their ability to send in election observers. Because let's be honest, Democrats are more eager to wear a mask still in 2025 than Republicans are. So they felt like their ability to be there and to be monitoring the election, the ballot counting, should outweigh the desire of the auditor for them to wear flimsy paper masks that we know don't really do anything to prevent the spread of COVID-19. So at the time, and what we talked about last week, there is a man named Tim Hazelow who decided, screw it, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to sit there and do my duty as the chair at the time of the Island County Republican Party, and I'm going to observe ballot counting and I'm not going to wear a mask. And if they decide to remove me, so be it. And that's exactly what happened.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Miller?
What's your name?
Tim Hazelow.
Tim Hazelow?
Yeah, okay. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've met before.
So tell me what's going on here.
I'm just observing my civil rights as the observer.
Okay, but as I know, they made a policy that you wear a mask while you're
in
there.
Which the RCW doesn't give them the authority to do so.
That's still a policy that's been set. And they've made that very clear to you.
Are you guys going to cite me for being here?
I'm going to ask you to leave.
I'm going to sit here and watch the balloting.
Then I'm going to insist you leave.
I'm going to sit here and watch the balloting.
No, you're not. Okay? You need to leave.
Are you going to write me a citation?
If I need to,
then
let's go. The charge is disorderly conduct.
Gotcha.
Okay, you have a mandatory court appearance.
Okay.
Do you have any other questions for
me? No.
I'm going to ask you not to return here today.
I won't.
Or you can end up in jail.
So he cited that day, and this was a couple days before the November election, for disorderly conduct, a misdemeanor. Now, I have an issue with that charge in and of itself. Nothing I saw in the video, in the body camera video, rose to the level of disorderly conduct. Now, I also believe Tim Hazelow went in there knowing he was supposed to wear a mask and didn't. And he even wanted, it seemed, to get cited so that he could sort of challenge this ruling. I think the rule about masking is stupid, but, you know, he knew he was going to get into something that day. Disorderly conduct, I think not, but that's the charge that he was facing. So fast forward, and he, as we reported last week, has now been charged with a felony after the elected prosecutor in that county sent his attorney an email basically saying either he pleads guilty to that misdemeanor, or if he's going to insist on taking this to court, we're going to charge him with a felony crime for like being in a ballot counting room unlawfully, which is a felony under RCW, even though Tim Hazelow had signed in, was in there with the, you know, permission to be in there. The only issue was he wasn't wearing a mask. So now all of a sudden, Tim Hazelow is facing a felony charge for being in the ballot counting room without a mask on and for not wanting to leave. He joined us on the show last week, and he's defiant, but he was also very emotional when it came to the possibility of becoming a felon.
I get a little emotional because I'm really worried. But our forefathers didn't give up. And this is crap.
It is crap. So there's a couple updates that we have for you on this today. So we had mentioned one of the issues here that's a pretty glaring issue is the Island County elected prosecutor, Greg Banks, is a vehement anti-Trumper. He, several years ago, was actually in the news because of some of his unhinged social media posts, not only about Donald Trump and Trump supporters and Republicans, but about people who refused to wear a mask. He compared Trump supporters to the KKK. He called them racist bullies with second-grade intellects and behavioral disorders. He said, even after we flush Trump, we have a difficult job to cleanse society of their diseased thinking. He said, collateral damage is a bitch, referring to the possibility that people would die if they didn't wear a mask, anti-maskers. So you see the clear conflicts here, right? We've got a prosecutor. First of all, he's dramatically overcharging this case. Seems like he's trying to make an example out of Tim Hazelow. And there are clearly, this is what conflict of interests are all about, right? You have a clear conflict of interest here. You were in the news for unhinged rants about Trump supporters, Republicans, and people who don't wear masks. So as you know, after we broke this story last week, actually before we had it on the show, we had reached out to the Island County prosecutor, Greg Banks, with a long list of questions for him about this case, about the RCW that he's charging Tim Hazelow with a felony under, about whether it's warranted in this case, and of course about the political underpinnings of the case. So he sent us, Nicole and I both agree, we've never quite gotten a response like this from an elected prosecutor about an ongoing case. It was incredibly lengthy. I can't read the whole thing for you. It would take like 20 minutes. And to me, it really seemed like he was on the defensive. Like he was trying to prove to us that what he was doing was just and absolutely not political at all, which I, of course, disagree with. Now, I appreciate him taking the time to respond. He was also just very sanctimonious, the word? Condescending. I think condescending, for instance, I'm just going to read you three or four excerpts from his response. So first, in terms of, you know, the facts of the case and my assertion that the felony that Tim Hazelow is being charged under doesn't apply here because he was authorized to be in that room. He signed in to be in that room. Now they wanted him to leave because he wasn't wearing a mask, but we have a felony on the books for unauthorized entry to like an election office, ballot facility. It's very clear that that has to do with people maybe storming in, people coming in and demanding to see ballot counting who aren't authorized to be there. It clearly has no relevance to this case. So here's part of his response. This is where I get the condescending part from. I prefer to litigate my cases in a courtroom subject to rules of evidence and judicial oversight, as opposed to the freewheeling world of podcasts and social media. I'm not surprised that Mr. Hazelow denies committing the crimes with which he has been charged. That is his right to demand proof beyond a reasonable doubt before a jury of his peers. Okay. So the other question we'd asked him in our lengthy inquiry to his office before our segment initially aired, we had given them plenty of time, was, why are you personally involved in the case? You know, I covered crime and justice exclusively for a long time. It was very rare for the elected prosecutor to step in and personally prosecute cases. You might see it in a very high-profile homicide case, for instance. You might see it then. But in a case that started as a misdemeanor, disorderly conduct, the elected prosecutor himself went to court for that. The first time, when it was just a misdemeanor, when they had their initial hearing on it. So we asked why. Why, you know, is that normal for you? It's a small county. We didn't know. It's a small county. Maybe it is totally normal for the elected prosecutor to be in court for things like this. But even he acknowledges that it's not, that this is very out of the ordinary. He said, I don't know when the last time was that I personally attended a hearing for misdemeanor crimes. I do follow certain misdemeanor cases when warranted, although it's admittedly infrequent. This is obviously a case with entirely different stakes than ordinary misdemeanor crimes, as the crime concerns unlawful interference with the administration of a presidential election. That is a very telling statement. So not only is he admitting, highly unusual for me to take on the case, he knows the case is getting public attention. Let's be honest here. He has a clear political bias, which we'll get to more in a moment. But when he's saying this is obviously a case with very different stakes, so you're admitting that this is a special case as opposed to other misdemeanor crimes, because he initially charged this as a misdemeanor. So this, in his eyes, is special, which I think feeds into the idea that he has a political bias that is motivating this case being dramatically overcharged. And for him saying the crime concerns unlawful interference with the administration of a presidential election, was the administration of the presidential election stopped, interfered with. Nobody is suggesting that ballot counting stopped during this period where Tim Hazelow refused to wear a mask. He had sat in there for some time while they were counting ballots completely uninterrupted. So it's a gross mischaracterization and over-exaggeration for him to say that Tim Hazelow sitting there not wearing a mask and the roughly 30 seconds police were in there talking to them interfered with the administration of a presidential election. Crazy stuff. So then it gets to the big question I think that everyone wants to know and that I'm glad he at least answered our questions about. Should you recuse yourself? You already admitted you don't usually get involved in cases like this anyway, that a deputy prosecuting attorney would do that. But you have been in the news for hateful, very hateful and vile comments about Trump supporters, Republicans, people who don't wear masks. All of those things relevant to this case. Now, before I read his response, I would say that conflict of interest when it comes to a court of law and a court proceeding is obviously very important. There's a reason why you have these, you know, judges who might recuse themselves or prosecutors who might recuse themselves or defense attorneys who won't take on a client because they have a conflict of interest. A conflict of interest doesn't mean that you are absolutely not able to handle the case fairly. It's very possible that if you have a conflict of interest, you're still going to go in there and do the job the way that you would have. But it's the perception that is also a problem. The public needs to perceive that the judicial system can function fairly. So even if he thinks that he can handle the case fairly and that his personal political bias won't intervene, does the public believe, Mr. Banks, who elected you, that you can handle the case fairly? So it's not just in action, it's in perception as well. And he doesn't seem to understand that. So two-part statement here from him on whether he needs to recuse himself. He said, I see no reason to recuse myself. My personal opinions about President Trump expressed during his first term as president are irrelevant to this case involving an act allegedly committed by someone other than President Trump. I don't know how he can say that they're irrelevant. They're incredibly relevant. You clearly dislike Trump supporters and Republicans. You wish death on people who don't wear masks. Like I said, it would be karma for them. How can you not see the relevance there? He goes on to say about his former posts on social media. After receiving criticism of my ill-advised posts about President Trump on my personal Facebook account many years ago, I reconsidered the wisdom of trying to be funny about topics that many people were very sensitive about. I publicly apologized for offending people and then deleted my Facebook account 6 or 7 years ago. I reconsidered the wisdom of trying to be funny about topics that many people were very sensitive about. So as you can imagine, I had some follow-up questions to Mr. Banks after he sent us his replies. And one of them was, what is funny about comparing Trump supporters to the KKK? What is funny about calling Trump supporters racist bullies with second-grade intellects and behavioral disorders while in elected office? What is funny about saying even after we flush Trump, we have a difficult job to cleanse society of their diseased thinking? What is funny about saying collateral damage is a bitch in response to a post about someone hoping that anti-maskers are killed instantly by COVID-19? I think I have a pretty good sense of humor. I find humor in a lot of things. I'm not easily offended. But I really struggle with what he found funny and finds funny today about those posts. Because again, he's saying he apologized for them, he removed them, but in the same breath, he's saying that he was trying to be funny about topics that many people were very sensitive about. I hate to break it to you, Prosecutor Banks, but clearly you're not very funny. Because I don't find those things funny at all. And it's concerning to me that as an elected prosecutor, you don't see the very, very clear conflict of interest that you have here. And the lack of judgment, even back then, as an elected prosecutor, you should never have posted things like that, knowing that people would question your ability to do your job without fear of favor. So all of that's happening, right? Tim Hazelow, that story went national. He's being charged with a felony. He says he's not going to back down. The prosecutor thinks there's no reason in the world he should recuse himself, says he's not going to litigate this case in the freewheeling world of podcasts, although he sent us a very lengthy response. We haven't gotten a response to our follow-up questions, which were also numerous. But there is another update to this. So we were informed the day that we aired that interview with Tim Hazelow that a second Island County Republican is now being threatened with felony charges unless she pleads guilty to a misdemeanor for her decision not to wear a mask inside the ballot counting room. So this was the very first woman who was removed from the ballot counting room a couple days before Tim Hazelow was. This was, I think, October 31st. There was ballot counting going on. Her name is Tracy Abel. And this is video of her being walked out, not in handcuffs, not under arrest or anything, the day that she declined to wear a mask.
Well, I'm sorry you have to come to this.
Okay, I am too.
Okay, but I have to take a stand for people.
Okay. Well, you've been asked to leave. I appreciate you leaving on your own accord.
Well, I'm not leaving on my own accord here. You guys are escorting me out.
Okay, here we go.
That is not leaving on my own accord here.
All right. Have a good day.
That seems like it was pretty polite to me, don't you think? Where they say, hey, you know, she says, I'm sorry it had to come to this. She's not under arrest or anything, wasn't cited with anything that day. The officers aren't wearing masks either. And they said, well, appreciate you leaving on your own. And she says, well, you're making me leave, essentially. But I mean, did anything in that video look like it would rise to the level of a felony offense? Well, Tracy Abel has informed us that she got a similar email to what Tim Hazelow got from Island County Prosecutor Greg Banks, saying either you plead guilty to a misdemeanor crime on this, or we are going to charge you. I mean, you'll meet Tracy in a second. I think elderly is a weird word to describe her because she does not seem elderly in the slightest. But this guy, this prosecutor, is so unhinged about this that he's going to take this older woman, gray hair and all, sweet lady who walked out very kindly, very understanding, and he's going to, in a state that is soft on crime, in a state that is pushing laws, Democrats in Olympia, to take it easy on child sex predators, to take it easy on gun offenders, to take it easy on gang members, in Island County, he is going to charge this woman with a felony crime because she had to be escorted out of a ballot counting room because she refused to wear a mask. So Tracy Abel was nice enough to join us exclusively on Undivided. Tracy, welcome to Undivided.
Hi, Brandy. Thanks for having me. Welcome to my kitchen.
Yeah, well, I joked when we got on the call. I said, there's my future felon, but I don't think there is a jury in the world that will convict you of a felony for this. So first of all, you haven't been charged with a felony yet, but you, like Tim Hazelow, got the kind of threatening email saying, if you don't plead guilty to a misdemeanor, we will charge you with a felony, correct?
Right. Can you believe that? I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. So for you, how do you plan? I mean, let's say that you never got that email from the, and it is from the elected prosecutor, right, Mr. Banks?
Well, he sent it to my lawyer.
Gotcha.
Oh, the lawyer sent it to me, and yeah.
Yeah. So if that had never come, I mean, what was your plan? Were you still planning to fight the misdemeanor?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I was gonna dismiss it because it's just, I mean, come on. Yeah. I didn't do anything wrong. You shouldn't have to, don't make me wear a mask. I mean, we have fought this for years. I have stacks and stacks of paperwork that says the mask doesn't work. So you're making me wear a mask. And, you know, the workers in there, oh my gosh, I'm glad that guy didn't have his mask on because they can't breathe in these. It was really heart-wrenching. It's heart-wrenching to watch it, and it's heart-wrenching for me because I'm just not going there, right?
And we'll talk about that video, the notorious Como video of like a day after you get escorted out, someone in there not wearing a mask, because I think it's crucial to this case. But, you know, now you're being threatened with a felony. A felony, as you know, is very serious. So is there a part of you that just wants to plead guilty to the misdemeanor so you don't have to face a felony?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, that's what
are you kidding? I'm like, gee, I mean, this is desperate. And, you know, but I had no idea. I've never dealt with Mr. Banks before. I mean, somebody said something, well, you better watch out. I had no idea until I saw some of the stuff he had posted before. And so, you know.
And what do you make of that? You know, we've shared it on the show, and we had Tim on last week comparing Trump supporters to, and are you a Trump supporter?
Absolutely.
I like that. Okay. I knew I liked you. So he called Trump supporters, he compared them to the KKK. He said we need to like rid the world of your diseased thinking, suggested that it would be like karma if anti-maskers died of COVID-19. So knowing what you know about this particular prosecutor's political animus, what do you believe the motivation for this case is?
Well, I believe it's political. I mean, the Democrats have no problem going in there, wearing a mask. I mean, they were lining up, and I don't care. You want to wear a mask, you're fine. And I believe it was intentional because, you know, I'm one of those people that started because I saw the nonsense 4 years ago. And I knew, I mean, I'm a wife, I'm a mom, a grandma. That was my life. I love my life. But I said, you know what? This isn't happening on my watch. And how can I be quiet knowing my children, my grandkids are in school with masks? And so I had to engage and I just went through the process. You know, I had to learn the Republicanism, I guess that's what you'd call it, being a Republican, how to do that, da, da, da. I always voted, but I found I was missing a whole bunch. I had no clue of what was happening. And so once I started, because I'm one of those that once you get going, you know, and I'm not quiet. If I see something wrong, I'm going to stand up. You're not doing that. I mean, like, can we just do the right thing? It's kind of funny. That same week that I was escorted out of the auditors or the election office, I was actually escorted out of by the police at a school board meeting for my protection. Because our school board meetings, we've got a school board trying to do the right thing. And we have a mob. They're going to tag us in the parking lot. I mean, just this last school board meeting, they went after an 80-year-old grandma. Wow. Right? So the fight's real, Brandy.
Well, Island County. Apparently, I need to get in the fight with you guys on Island County because you're running circles around me.
It's crazy. It's just, you know, we just want to do the right thing. Protect our children, right? Make sure. I mean, the whole reason for me actually observing is elections is to protect our election workers as well, to say, hey, yeah, there's no cheating going on here, right? Yeah. Everything's good, and everything was good until we couldn't reconcile like 3 votes or something. And then next thing I know, they're okay, you be in the hallway. You can, that's why, because everybody's like, well, the police officers weren't wearing one.
Yeah.
If you stand in the hallway, in the doorway, you don't have to wear a mask. Well, okay, I can't do my job effectively observing anything, peeking around a doorway to see if I can see it. So
can I ask you, Tracy, just to get some details? First of all, you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Okay, we'll practice for court here. So we've seen the video of you coming out, and even the, you know, law enforcement says, thank you for leaving on your own. And you said, well, FYI, I'm not. You're escorting me out because it was important for you to let them know I would not leave on my own if that were the choice, right? We don't yet have the body camera video like we do with Tim of the initial interaction with police and everything that happened in there. Did you do anything else that we need to know about besides just refuse to wear a mask?
No.
Nothing that could be could rise to the level of a felonious activity?
No, I thought about it, but I thought, you know, I'll just walk out. Let's just go, you know?
Yeah.
Because before the incident, I talked to the police officer and I said, you know, at some point I'm going in there, okay? Because this can't stand. This is unconstitutional. I mean, you have elected official making rules without the health department knowing.
Yeah.
Okay. And this could happen statewide. If it's not me, it could be another small county. So, you know, this is setting precedent. And I just had to make a stand that no, we're not going to wear a mask. Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it's going to be, but no, I didn't brawl with them.
Yeah.
They said they wouldn't manhandle me.
Oh, well, that's good. I don't think that would be a good look, manhandling you. I mean, you can hold your own, but I don't think that would have been a good look. Yeah. And I don't think they want.
Well, I ask him, are you going to manhandle me? And he said he wouldn't.
Yeah.
So
well, I'm sure some of these officers, I'm sure some of these officers didn't want to be going in there and doing this over a mask either.
They didn't.
How long were you in there without a mask before the police took you out? And do you believe that in any way this, what happened in there and your refusal to leave interfered with the administration of that election?
Oh, no. They just came in there and they said I had to leave. The election officials came in and they're like, you can't be here with the mask. And I said, well, you know, you're going to have to, I can't leave for our people. You know, there again, it's about our people. It's about, I mean, at the time I was part of the leadership of the Republican Party. And, you know, that's my duty, was to make sure that our elections were secure, you know, to protect our, I get it, they're older, but, and they have a system, but I have to protect them as well. That the public doesn't think they're cheating, you know?
Well, I think that's an important point to make, is it's not just about, you know, catching things that go wrong. It's about being able to tell people nothing, I watched, nothing untoward happened. And how long were you sitting in there without a mask before police came in to retrieve you?
Oh, about a half hour.
About a half hour. And did you see anyone else not wearing a mask, or that day was it just you?
No, it was just me.
Yeah.
I just went in there. Because I'd been in the hallway and I just said enough is enough and I went in.
Yeah. So Como News came out, I believe it was the day after, and did a story on this whole controversy. And they captured a glimpse of an elderly man sitting there counting ballots without a mask on, without a mask in sight, no mask hanging down under his chin. What do you make of that? That you're let out by police and the next day there's someone in there sitting there on TV counting ballots without a mask on?
Well, first of all, I feel really bad for the guy, okay? Because like I said, I watch these people try to breathe in it, right? Because they, even at the statewide recount, they still had to wear masks. I had to watch them. Even though I didn't wear a mask, they still did. So, you know, my heart breaks for him because I get it, right? But I just found it, I mean, to me, it was a God thing. It was a blessing that that video was taken. And just at the moment she's saying there's no secrets, here's the guy not wearing a mask. And this was the day after. It was the same day, because we actually gave him a cease and desist letter.
Yeah.
Okay. And we didn't file it at that time, right? But we just gave him the opportunity just to say, stop it, right? And yeah,
wow.
That didn't work. But it worked in my favor, the video.
I mean, absolutely. I think that's Exhibit A in court, right? Have you ever asked or been given an answer as to why that gentleman was able to be in there the next day with no mask?
You know, Brandy, I haven't been there. I mean, you know, I went there, we filed the cease and desist thing in court on election day.
Yeah.
But, and there was hundreds of people lined up to get a ballot. I'm like, what the heck? Why didn't you get your ballot?
Yeah.
But at that point, you know, I'm just like, I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I kind of stayed away.
I did go back
to see, because there's a video of me going back. I took my girlfriend and I said, okay, because they did it during the recount, they stopped it. So when I went back, I said, okay, I just want to make sure is the mandate gone? And it wasn't.
Wow.
So,
Well, yeah. Tracy, hang in there. I know that you guys are working through this. It sounds like you've given Prosecutor Banks your answer that you're not pleading guilty to anything. And so if that means that they charge a felony, I think in this case, I mean, public opinion on this is going to be harsh toward the prosecutor, I think. I mean, you see the video of you coming out perfectly polite in a state that is soft on crime. To think that you're the person they're going to throw a felony charge at is quite unbelievable. So, Tracy, keep us updated, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot for having me, Brandy. And I want to tell everybody, yeah. Okay, because I'm the mom, the wife, the grandma. Get engaged. I can't do this by myself. I can't be the voice. I have such an incredible team over here, our ladies group. They are getting on this school board, and I see a change. So it may look ugly, right? You may be getting the smack down, but you are the voice. You're the only people. We are taking our country back. If it's all the moms and grandmas, so be it. But we are taking our country back.
I love it. I hope Donald Trump sees this. He'll just be your number one fan. So, Tracy, thank you so much. Thank you for taking a stand. And we'll be following this case until its conclusion or until the prosecutor does the right thing. So thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, Brandy.
Crazy, right? That's the person they're going to charge with a felony crime. She seemed like somebody who's deserving of a felony. And look, at the end of the day, they knew that they were supposed to wear masks in there. Obviously, it's a ridiculous mandate. I don't know if it's legal, but until they go through the steps of trying to challenge it or whatever it is, I don't know that they can have no expectation that there'll be no consequences for them. But I think escorting them out and not letting them in there is consequence enough. You know, I think it's stupid, but isn't that... Can't we just leave it at that? Like, hey, you can't be in here unless you're going to wear a mask. And then they can go and challenge the mask rule and all of that stuff. But to say, we're going to charge you with a misdemeanor, and then we're going to turn around, and if you don't accept that misdemeanor, we're going to charge you with a felony. And as a prosecutor, I'm not going to recuse myself, even though I have a documented history of unhinged, vile beliefs about Trump supporters, Republicans, and anti-maskers. The whole situation is insane. It's clear lawfare. In my opinion, it's prosecutorial misconduct. It is using the power of your office to go after cases that you yourself say you usually wouldn't have any involvement in, and to charge them under ridiculous statutes that clearly don't apply to the situation at hand. And look, you know, find something, if the officers believe that Tim Haslow is being disorderly or whatever it is, even though watching the video, I don't see anything disorderly in there. He made them take him out, maybe trespass him from the building or something like that. The whole situation is insane. We have more follow-ups that we're working on as we speak because we are not going to let this thing go, because Tracy and Tim deserve better than that, and our election system deserves better than that. I mean, they'll hardly ever take any accusations of election interference or fraud or opportunities for fraud seriously, won't even talk about it, and all of a sudden two people don't wear a mask in a ballot counting room and they're Republicans and you're going to throw a felony at them? Crazy stuff. We have another crazy story for you, an exclusive coming up next. Some of you would have watched this interview on Sundays with subscribers. We have some updates to it, and we want to play a clip for those watching the live show today, because there's an interview we're going to be airing tomorrow that I think is going to be pretty significant. First, I've talked a lot about the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. If you're like me, you've probably done a million crash diets. If you've struggled with your weight, I've struggled with my weight my entire adult life. Not one diet or program or whatever has ever worked for me in the long term, besides Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. I lost 40 pounds, most of that in 2 months, and they give you some simple steps. You don't feel like you're on a lifelong diet, but you can make some healthy lifestyle changes. There's no drugs, no injections, no crazy workout routines. It's just eating the right foods in the right portions to jumpstart your metabolism, and then you can lose weight quickly over a short period of time, and then making some simple healthy lifestyle changes. So reach out to our friend Dr. Ryan Coogan, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, and start just with a free 15-minute consultation. You know, not every program is going to be right for every person. So you want to make sure you ask questions to see if it's a program you can actually stick to before you pay for it. So eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Okay, on Sundays with Subscribers yesterday, we had an interview with a young woman named Frances Stout and her mom, Amy. So Frances, admittedly, she thrust herself into the public spotlight after her last JV basketball game of the year. She made a decision to sit out. She didn't even make it past warmups. She decided to sit on the bench, because a biological boy was competing on the opposing team, the Shelton girls junior varsity basketball team. So Frances had told herself a long time ago and had told her parents, if I'm ever faced with a situation where I have to play against a biological boy, I'm going to sit out. And her parents supported her in that. So when she realized there was a biological boy, she said, I'm not playing. So she was so frustrated with how everything played out that she took to social media. I'm not going to read her whole post, but she goes through kind of what happened. The fact that she sat out, she said, I made the decision to sit out of my very last basketball game of the season because I refuse now and forever to compete against any biological male in any sport that I play. I was incredibly distraught at the fact that nobody would step in on our behalf, including staff, coaches, referees, and parents from both sides. This is due to the sheer fact that in our society, we have been pushed to be silent and bow down to the demands to accept what we know to be untrue. So after that post went out there, and there was a lot of drama, as you can imagine, following that post with the school telling her you have to take it down, the father of the trans athlete sending relentless text messages to Frances's mom, Amy, saying, I'll come to your house if you don't answer my phone calls. It was all nuts. But we played an interview. We did an in-depth interview that aired on Sundays with Subscribers yesterday with Frances and Amy. Here's part of it.
I saw my mom having a conversation with my coach, and something seemed to be up. And she told me, she said, there is a man on their team. And I looked over, and sure enough, there was. And so I made the decision to sit out, and I did not play 1 minute of that game because I have a right to for my safety, and I should be allowed to play against girls. And so, yeah, I made the decision to sit out and not play.
Wow. So when did you notice, Mom?
So I noticed we came in after Frances and her team had already started warm-ups, mm-hmm. we being my husband and son and I, and I pretty much noticed right away. We went up to the bleachers, got our seats, and then I was watching warm-ups, and I saw this person right away. The year previous, Frances was on the C team, mm-hmm. and we had noticed this person mm-hmm. on the JV team last year.
Okay.
But it wasn't an issue. Frances had not played against them because she was on a different team. Mm-hmm. It did become an issue at the end of that game last year when Frances went into the locker room mm-hmm. and this person was in her locker room.
Mm-hmm. Same player.
Yes. Okay. She came out crying, very upset that she went into her locker room where her personal items were being kept and this person was in there. Mm-hmm. We didn't say anything. We talked as a family at this time and said, look, if this becomes an issue in the seasons to come, you have a right to make a decision on whether or not you want to sit out. And she made that decision at that moment last year that I will never play against someone other than a girl in mm-hmm. my sports. Mm-hmm. So this year, as my husband and I walk into the game and I notice, I said, that's that same player and that's not a girl. And so I walked down to the varsity coach and I said, is that a boy on their team? And he said, I cannot make a statement on this. However, I'm in agreement with you. And mm-hmm. he said, you need to go talk to the athletic director. I said, okay, can you point me? I am not a parent that is always in the ear of the coach, the athletic director, the teachers. Mm-hmm. I am, if my kids need to send an email, they're sending the email. Mm-hmm. I'm not a, you know, my kid needs to play. They work for it. And yeah. That's the kind of parents we are. That's who we've raised them to be. So I hadn't met the athletic director before. I'd seen him at games.
Was he at the game?
He was at the game.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so I went up to him and I said, can you tell me if that's a boy on the court down there? And he said, I am not going to say that. We do not discriminate. And I said, well, you're discriminating against my daughter by putting her out there potentially against a boy player. And he said, well, we follow WIAA and Washington state law. I said, President Trump yesterday signed an executive order that went into federal law yesterday. Mm-hmm. He said, we do not have to follow that. We follow Washington state. At that, I was thoroughly disgusted, and I went back to my seat. There was not a scene at this time. I went back to my seat. I told my husband what just took place. Mm-hmm. Frances had already made the decision to sit out. Mm-hmm. And as far as I was concerned, I was going to follow up with it a different time,
sure.
with an email, with a collection of, you know, support through parents who I know feel the same way, mm-hmm. To maybe do it not in the moment. it wasn't until I had noticed, you know, what was going on with this player on the court that I asked my son to go take some video. I wanted it to be recorded that this player was in fact playing, that the athletic director was in fact there, that the principal was there, and that everyone was aware of this. So I asked him to go down and take some video, not as a spectacle, like in a rude way, as a quiet, just go down and take some video. So as he went down and started videoing, another employee of the school came up to him, got in his face, and said, "You better think twice about what you're doing right now."
Wow.
And
stood to right your junior to, high
my,
son.
To my 13-year-old son. Mm. And this is a bigger man that did this. And my son was obviously taken aback by someone getting in his face. And he said it again, "You better think twice about what you're doing." And he turned the video off and came up and told me. And that's when I became enraged. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't the issue that enraged me. It was that set off in that moment that someone came up to my son and told him he needed to turn this video off and got him, threatened him, "You better think twice." Mm-hmm. I don't agree with this issue. That's why I'm here today. But they wanted to hide this. They didn't, and through further conversation, that brought me to talking to this person, and he said, "Well, his intent was to put it on social media." I said, "You can't speak to my son's intent. Mm-hmm. He's 13. He doesn't even have social media." And that's when the principal came over and the athletic director. And at that, the principal was trying to hush us back around the corner to where people weren't, you know, hearing the conversation. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Are you telling me Frances is never going to get knocked down or potentially injured by someone bigger, stronger, or faster than she is?" And I just said, "Are you willing to be quoted on what you just said to me?" And he didn't know what to say.
Wow. So Frances, while this is happening, you've made the decision. For you, is that did you tell the coach?
I went and sat down on the bench. I have to get taped before the game and everything. And I already was taped and for my ankle. And I took my tape off. I put my normal shoes on and put my warm-up shirt back on. And my coach said, "Frances, are you like okay?" And I said, "I'm not playing. There's a boy on the team." And all I heard back was "okay." And that was it. And so I sat the bench the rest of the game, and I didn't say anything like bad. Mm-hmm. I sat there and was quiet and obviously upset, but I did not cause a scene until I saw one of my teammates get hurt very bad and have to get taken off crying. And that's what set me off crying, because I care deeply for her and to see her get hurt.
So your coach seemed to understand.
Mm-hmm. My coaches were understanding, but nothing was done to stop the game from going on and letting him play.
What do you make of the fact that you, a 15-year-old girl, have to be the one to take a stand when all these adults around you wouldn't stand up for you guys?
I think it's a shame, because I am young and I'm still a teenager, and to think that I have to be the one to stand up. I'm not afraid to stand up. I am very strong in my beliefs, and I'm not scared, but I do think it's a shame that I have to be the one.
What was the response like to your post?
I did have a lot of support, but I also had threats made. Mm-hmm. I had people telling me I'm going to hell. I've had people saying, "Good luck having any future after this," and saying, "I know all of the people right now that are reporting your account are just happy to see your downfall, and know that it's going to be a real rough time for you in your future because of your decision to post this."
Threatening to get jumped. Mm-hmm. Wow. Threatening to, "I hope you choke on an expletive and die. I hope." I mean, very awful things to say to a 15-year-old who was only ever trying to stand up for herself and what she believes.
I also saw an email from the school that said that they're kind of launching this investigation into accusations of harassment and bullying. Did you harass and bully this player?
No.
Did you do anything that could be construed as harassment or bullying?
No. I've never been the kind of person to go out of my way to make people feel bad about themselves. And I have been a person to stick up for others, and I've been known for that, to be a good friend to people and I think it's wrong to go and bully someone and go out of your way mm-hmm. to do that. I was sticking up for my rights mm-hmm. and I expressed that to the school, and it is me saying that I'm, as a female, have the right to play against females, and that was it.
What would you say to, you know, the folks who head our public school system, to our elected leaders who have said that they plan to fight the Trump administration tooth and nail on his decision to ban men from women's sports?
Well, I think, what about fighting for us? What about fighting for the girls who are completely against it and feel like they can't do anything because they've been silenced? And I've had multiple people reach out to me and say, thank you for saying something. I've experienced this, and I was too scared to say something myself, and I felt like I didn't have anyone there to listen. And why, if they care so much about the men being able to play in female sports, do they not care about how the female feel about it, how the girls feel, and how it affects us and everything we've worked for? So,
what would you say to President Donald Trump?
Well, I would say thank you for standing up for us, and I think that it is so important, and I appreciate it because I think that is something that I wish I never had to deal with in the first place, and the fact that he is taking a stand against it as well. I'm forever grateful for that.
So that's part of our interview that aired on Sundays with subscribers with Frances and her mom, Amy. It's about an hour long. I suggest you go watch the whole thing. You can sign up undividedpod.com. Usually we don't play such long clips from our Sunday show on the live show, but there's a reason, and it really comes down to fairness, that we wanted to play for our entire audience her side of the story and her explanation of what she did. It is because tomorrow on our live show, we are going to be joined by the transgender athlete from the Shelton team and that athlete's father. We're actually taping that interview today. So out of fairness, on the show tomorrow, we're going to play a pretty good chunk of it. I think it'll be a fascinating conversation. The entire story will air this week on Sundays with subscribers. You know, I've had a phone conversation with the transgender athlete's father. You know, we had a pretty frank discussion, and he even showed his child some of my coverage of the transgender issue. They're fully aware that I don't believe that biological boys should be competing against girls. And so it is with a full knowledge of my position on this issue that they've agreed to come in. I think they're to be applauded for that. We haven't taped the interview yet. In fact, it's happening after the show today. The transgender athlete's name is Andy. I'm impressed that Andy's willing to come in, knowing my position on this issue, knowing the criticism, and to talk to me. I've never interviewed on this show or otherwise a transgender individual, certainly not a minor, certainly not someone at the center of an issue this controversial around protecting girls' sports. So needless to say, I think it's going to be a pretty interesting show tomorrow. So that is why I played a big chunk of what Frances and her mom, Amy, had to say before we have Andy and Andy's dad on the show tomorrow. So pretty interesting stuff. So before that happens, go back for sure and watch that full interview with Frances and her mom, Amy. Now, as all of that is happening, right on cue, the teachers union is coming to the defense of only the side that agrees with radical gender ideology. The Tumwater Education Association came out on social media, posted this meme or whatever it is, "Dear trans kids, this world is better with you in it, and you are worth fighting for," which I would point out is the first thing Nicole thought too, is who's saying that the world's not better with them in it? Is anybody saying that? Is anybody saying that they wish they'd go away or die or whatever they're trying to suggest here? This is the entirety of the Tumwater Education Association's post. "Hate cannot drive out hate.
That is why we love and educate all students from all walks of life. Education is a human right. To those who say educators are indoctrinating students, students are teaching educators to accept students for who they really are as humans. We are not indoctrinating students. We are loving our students as they show up in our public schools. We are recognizing our students as they already exist in the world. We are accepting our students as they come to us in order to ensure they are happy and healthy in public schools. Public schools are just that, public. We educate those among the public who already exist. Hatred wrapped in the cloak of euphemisms is still hatred. Only love can drive out hate. To all of our non-binary students reading this post, please know that we love you and see your humanity. So here's the deal with that. It just proves what Frances just said in that interview, where Frances at the end is saying it feels like they don't care about us. It's always about the feelings of transgender students or whatever it is, and they don't have any care or concern for what female athletes are put through, for how female students feel when their spaces are invaded. And you get that vibe from the Tumwater Education Association, where they're saying, you know, we want our students to be happy and healthy in public schools. You know, we want to appreciate everyone. What are you doing to acknowledge and understand the frustration of young women like Frances? In fact, Frances today is being investigated by the Tumwater School District for bullying. Because, admittedly, when she was, I think, leaving the game, she looked at Andy, the transgender athlete, and said, "You're a man." And that was in a moment of intense frustration. But Andy is a boy, a biological boy. And so is that rise to the level of bullying, to not use the correct gender, identity or whatever it is? So this is a ridiculous situation. The Tumwater Education Association is absolutely indoctrinating students, not the other way around. That's what they suggest here, is like, oh, it's the students who are indoctrinating us, the students who are teaching us to accept students for who they really are as humans. So there's really no care or concern given to the plight of girls and women in this country who are dealing with men invading their spaces, who have advantages to them. So it's just ridiculous. Shame on the Tumwater Education Association. And I will say, they're being eviscerated in the comments, and there's a little part of me that gets joy out of that. But again, I am very much looking forward to talking to Andy. I think that Andy has a really unique perspective that I've never heard on this show. I don't believe that Andy and Andy's dad are any less worthy of basic decency. And so, yeah, I mean, we'll have that conversation. We'll bring it to you on the show tomorrow. It is going to be I can already tell it's going to be a great week on Undivided, for sure. All right, another banger of a story for you. This is the definition of cronyism. The definition. You look in the dictionary, flip to the C's, cronyism. It'll be a picture of Dow Constantine as the CEO of Sound Transit. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So there's been a lot of rumors about what Dow Constantine will do after his four terms as King County executive. Of course, we previously thought maybe he wanted to be named the next president of UW. UW has already named its next president. It is not Dow Constantine. Dow Constantine has said he's not running for re-election. Thank God, after 16 years, one would hope, should have not run for re-election 8 years ago. And his term is done at the end of this year. So now we found out what he really wants to do. And what Dow Constantine really wants to do is be the next CEO of Sound Transit, which pays up to $650,000 a year. So you might say, well, okay, is he qualified for it? I mean, he was the King County executive for four terms. Qualification, I would argue, no. But even if he were the most qualified person on the planet to be the next CEO of Sound Transit, it would be the most corrupt decision in the world to place him in that position. Now, before I get to my shocking agreement with one of the most leftist publications in the entire state of Washington, I will say I had a conversation with a source over the weekend who told me that they know that today Dow Constantine has the votes, that he is de facto a shoo-in to be the next CEO of Sound Transit. They're very sure of it. They've talked to people who are involved in it, counted the votes. Dow Constantine, if the vote happened today of the Sound Transit Board to decide the next CEO, it would be Dow Constantine. Now, this may be one of the only times I ever agree with Seattle's far left blogosphere, because we're all in agreement that this reeks of cronyism and cannot be allowed to happen. So let's talk about the reasons why. So first, this from The Urbanist. Oh, yes. The Urbanist and I in full agreement, which is like a far left, like very progressive, pro-public transit, sort of, you know, pro-anti-cop, whatever it is. You get the gist. Their headline, Dow Constantine reveals Sound Transit CEO bid. It says the executive committee of the Sound Transit Board of Directors dove into its CEO search and revealed it has winnowed the top candidates down to five, including one of their own. Following months of rumors, Sound Transit board member Dow Constantine revealed he is pursuing the CEO job, shedding light on what he intends to do at the conclusion of his fourth term as King County executive at year's end or potentially sooner. So a little bit of background here that's important to know when we talk about why this is cronyism. So The Urbanist, as The Urbanist points out, the county executive seat comes with automatic Sound Transit board membership. I can pull this up for you. The county executive seat comes with automatic Sound Transit board membership. So that's why he's on the Sound Transit board, because it's automatic. The King County executive gets a seat on the board. And however, the ability to appoint the county's delegation on the board. So after Constantine's 15 years on the board, King County's 10 members on the 18-member board are there because Constantine appointed them. Let that sink in. So he's been the King County executive for so long that every single member of King County's delegation to the Sound Transit board, 10 of a total 18, are Dow Constantine appointees. Who decides who the next CEO of Sound Transit is? The Sound Transit Board of Directors. So Dow Constantine himself has personally appointed the people who would then elect him to a $650,000 a year job to be the CEO of Sound Transit. Cronyism, by definition. And The Urbanist and lefties in Seattle, lefty organizations, agree. Like Seattle Subway, which is like a lefty sort of pro-public transit entity, they told The Urbanist, selecting any current board member as CEO would be a massive breach of ethical standards. The CEO will have to exercise great fortitude in standing up to this board to ensure the user experience is not sacrificed for the sake of special interests. And of course, how in the world would Dow Constantine and would the board stand up to Dow Constantine when he was one of them for so long and gave more than half of them their jobs? Riddle me that. This would be one of the most corrupt things to happen in King County in the last 20 years. If Dow Constantine gets to spend 16 years padding the Sound Transit board with his appointees, and then having those appointees hand him a job worth $650,000 a year. So again, corrupt, even if he were the most qualified person on the planet for the job. But of course, a secondary issue is that he is far from the most qualified person for the job. The Sound Transit CEO would be tasked with leading an agency that has, to the best of my knowledge, never finished a project on time and on budget. Sound Transit is notorious for going late in its projects, for costing people hundreds of millions of dollars in overages. It has already been a poorly run entity, and Dow Constantine has been on the board for 15 years, has appointed more than half the members of the board during this period of complete incompetence for Sound Transit and waste. And we now think that making him the CEO would make the situation better? Not to mention that he's done the exact same thing, if we need a little redundancy, he's done the exact same thing as the King County executive. What's happening right now in King County? As we speak, they are having to make massive budgetary cuts, including to law enforcement, because they're so far in the hole. Because Dow Constantine did not heed advice much like the state legislature, to cut back on spending, to eliminate some of the waste, and now they find themselves in such a massive budget deficit that they have to make cuts to the King County Sheriff's Office at a time when they can't afford to make any cuts to law enforcement because we're in such a bad public safety situation. So we have a guy who has run King County into the ground as its executive from every major on every, except maybe like left-wing ideology where he exceeds on every major indicator of the health of the county and the quality of life from homelessness to crime to substance abuse to a lack of affordability. He has failed. And it's not even close, not even open for debate. He has failed. In his second job as a board member for Sound Transit, he has been part of that entity's failure to deliver projects on time and on budget and make good on promises. And now you want to reward him. This is what we call failing up with a $650,000 a year job handed to him by the people he appointed to the Sound Transit Board. How are we even having this conversation? I mean, there are stories that we discuss where I talk about corruption that's a little more nuanced. You might say it's like in the eye of the beholder. It's up to political opinions. This isn't nuanced at all. This isn't left up to political disagreements. The Urbanist and Brandy Cruz agree that this would be corrupt and it would be cronyism. You don't get two alternate media entities in the state of Washington more diametrically opposed than me and the Urbanist, except maybe the Stranger. So if I agree and they agree, there's no room for interpretation. This would be corruption. It would be completely inappropriate. And it would be, like I said, one of the biggest political scandals in King County in 20 years. And we had a potential sex predator who was the mayor of Seattle. So this is wild stuff. It cannot be allowed to happen. As I said, a source told me he has the votes. So something's going to have to happen here. There has to be so much public outcry, and hopefully, the media does its job to point out how problematic this would be. And either Dow Constantine removes himself from consideration, or the board members wise up, and they're going to have the testicular fortitude to say, sorry, we can't appoint you to this position, even though you appointed us. Because that's just, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. So there's no wiggle room here for him to sort of try to play this as not corrupt, as not cronyism. It is. It's the definition of it. So I don't know who would disagree. I look forward to someone coming out to try to defend Dow Constantine and this happening, but he's already in the final five. He never should have had his name for consideration. And in fact, it should be unlawful for a county executive that's a member of the Sound Transit Board to be considered for at least, let's say, 20 years. For 20 years, you cannot be considered for the CEO position of Sound Transit after you leave office. I think 20 years is fair. So this is a crazy situation. I've never seen anything quite like it. And the fact that I'm hearing from a source that he's already got the job. And one more wrinkle on this. He would have to either resign early or they'd have to appoint an interim CEO until the end of his term as King County executive because they need to replace the current executive in the spring. So like in a month or two. So this is a crazy situation. And we will be following it closely and we will not relent on this. And I hope our now friends at The Urbanist do the same. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter while you're there. All right. I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. And there's a reason for that. It's an absolute no-brainer. First Mark Insurance. First of all, they never charge you for your services. The First Mark Challenge is completely free, and they have saved an untold number of Undivided viewers and listeners hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a year on their insurance. Eric told us that he was managing his own homeowners and car insurance policy for decades. He said, I was of the school of thought, why do I need a middleman when I can work directly with the insurance companies myself? Well, he said, the people at First Mark quickly showed me the error of my ways by saving me over 30% on my auto policy and a whopping 70% on my homeowners policy. Not exaggerating. I now tell anyone I know who's dealing with changes to their insurance to give First Mark a call. So if you don't trust me, trust Eric. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company, so they're always going to have your best interest in mind. And that's why sometimes when people go to them, they turn around and tell them, hey, we actually can't save you money, so we stick with the insurance that you already have. So FirstMarkInsurance.com. All right. I am big defender of the First Amendment, big defender. The media has a lot of power to be able to print things, say things without consequence, without prosecution, etc. And unfortunately, that's how it has to be. But this is a case where I thought for the first time in a long time, can we criminally prosecute the Seattle Times? I still think the answer is no, but let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. This is wild, wild stuff. I've said, so I think the immigration issue is going to get violent. I don't see the cartel giving up that easily. And that scares me. And I'm scared for the men and women of law enforcement. I'm scared for the men and women of the Border Patrol and immigration and customs enforcement. We had talked on the show maybe a week or two ago about the fact that these national outlets were leaking plans from sources about ICE raids. You know, oh, there's one in Los Angeles coming or Chicago. And of course, that creates a couple problems. One, it gives the criminals a heads up, and that's really who they've been out there rounding up, are people who have violent criminal histories or reentry or whatever it is. So it gives them a heads up so they can try to take steps to protect themselves. But also, it gives them the ability to be ready to potentially fight back against law enforcement and kill members of law enforcement. So it puts law enforcement in a dangerous position. And I said at the time, there's no other sort of criminal, like, raid or anything like that, or enforcement action that the media would print stuff like that. Can you imagine? Oh, today the state patrol is going to be busting potential child sex predators through their net nanny operation. They're going to be staked out at a motel waiting for sex predators who are coming there thinking that they're going to hook up with a kid. They would never do that. You would never do that. But so why does the media think it's okay when it comes to ICE immigration raids? Well, of course, it's because they're ideologically captured. So the Seattle Times and the Tri-City Herald, I think the article was originally from the Tri-City Herald. It was republished in the Seattle Times, but the Seattle Times can choose not to republish it, but they did anyway. The headlines differ, but it's the same story. Tri-City Herald, what are your rights if you see ICE activity? Recommended safety practices for bystanders. The Seattle Times headline, what to know if bystanders see ICE raids, operations in Washington. So I shit you not. This whole article is built off of recommendations from an organization called the Washington Immigrant Solidarity Network. So this far leftist organization puts out, you know, advice, tips. What happens if you see an ICE immigration raid near you? And these news entities take that advice, they turn around and they publish it as a news story, giving step-by-step directions for what you should do if you see an ICE immigration enforcement happening in your community. Dangerous for all the same reasons as it is if you pre-publicize a raid. You're basically, as the news media, telling people, here's how you avoid ICE. Here's how you, what, tattle on ICE for doing what? Keeping our communities safe? So the level of detail in here is insane. I'll just read a little bit of it. Again, this is a news story. It's crazy. You have the right to record activity and interactions with immigration and law enforcement officers so long as you do not impede them from doing their job. If you're asked to back up, this organization, the Washington Immigrant Solidarity Network, suggests taking a step back and repeating, quote, I am exercising my right to record and document. If officers get too close to you, state that you have stepped back and repeat, you are exercising your right to record. You want to remain calm, but speak firmly. You guys, this is a news story. It goes on to say, take notes of what you see. How many officers are there? What are they wearing? What cars are involved? And are they marked? What agency? Are people being questioned or detained? If you feel safe, legally, you can ask an officer why they are there. Once you begin documenting activity, the organization recommends disabling thumbprint or facial recognition protection on your iPhone. Using a passcode better protects your evidence and information. Do not disclose anyone's legal status, even if asked by ICE. They're giving people a blueprint to impede ICE from carrying out lawful enforcement actions. In what other context would the media do this? And like I said, there was a whole list in there. take note of officer identification, agency, badge number, uniform, name, the specific address, language used by the officers, cars, note the license plates and agency if marked. Take note of any physical force. Any post you make should include date and time, street name or specific description of the area, pictures or videos with timestamps. It's like a playbook for how to be an anti-ICE activist, and these things could absolutely put members of law enforcement in danger. Posting all their identifying information, where were they, specific time, street name, so now you know ICE is operating in this area, so it's just as good as giving people a heads up. And I would ask again for the Seattle Times, the Tri-City Herald, for the politicians and entities who are pushing back against this, who are you protecting? Who are you defending? The ICE arrests that I have seen in the greater Seattle area have been of very dangerous criminals. In fact, ICE Seattle just put out a press release over the weekend. It said ICE Seattle arrests aliens who pose significant public threats in Washington. There were three of them. One of them was a citizen of China who has convictions in the state of Washington for drug manufacturing. Gee, I wonder what kind of drug he was manufacturing from China. Fentanyl, the kind of drug that's killing people. One of them, a citizen of El Salvador, previously arrested for commercial sex abuse of a minor. A citizen of Kazakhstan? They're from everywhere here. Unlawfully present in the U.S. and considered to be a threat to public safety, it says. And then I would note, there have been many, many other previous arrests from ICE Seattle of illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, here on a variety of criminal histories, child rape, reckless driving, assault, domestic violence, narcotics distribution, reentry, obstructing an officer, battery, theft, hit and run. So those are the people the Seattle Times and the Tri-City Herald are trying to protect? Like, look, I understand that a group called the Washington Immigrant Solidarity Network is going to protect those individuals. But that doesn't mean that the Seattle Times, the highest circulated newspaper in the entire state, has to do their bidding and put out a step-by-step process for how to impede law enforcement and ICE. And I post this on social media, paging Tom Homan. Because again, the media has a lot of rights under the First Amendment. I wouldn't want it to be any other way. But if there is an ICE officer who is killed in our state, if there's a Border Patrol agent, an immigration official who's killed in our state, I will be looking to the Tri-City Herald and the Seattle Times, because they will be in part to blame, not only for this, but for their reporting on this issue that makes it seem like ICE is out there just rounding up babies and families. Truly insane. I have a low opinion of the Seattle Times, but just when I think it can't get any lower, another abyss opens up that gets us even closer to hell. Unbelievable. All right, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll next. I have a feeling it's one Nicole and I are going to disagree on, but we'll find out. Occasionally that happens. Many of you might assume that the real estate market is slow right now, but it's actually a really good time to list your home. That's because there's all of this pent-up demand. Our friend Wes Jones says right now what his experience is homes that are hitting the market right now are selling really quickly due to that pent-up buyer demand, and there's limited options out there. So sellers face less competition, making it a very advantageous time to list. And the spring market is already kicking out. So listing now allows sellers to get ahead of the increased competition that is going to be coming up as we get further into spring. So February, March, May, these are all top months of the year to list a home. So reach out to our friend Wes Jones. Oh my God, he just posted this gorgeous listing in Bridal Trails. I was like, I can't afford that house, but I want to look at pictures of it. So it was just gorgeous. But anyway, sellwithwest.com. Sellwithwest.com. He'll start by giving you a free market analysis. You can understand how things are working in your neighborhood, in your area, what you can expect to get from your home, etc. Sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. All right. So President Donald Trump posted something that has social media all aflutter, and it's the subject of our daily subscriber show poll. So he posted it in two different ways. So on Truth Social, he retweeted a post from Logan Hall that has a quote from Napoleon. It says, "He who saves his country violates no law." And he retweeted that. So people were all aflutter. And then he took to X and he just posted the quote himself without quotation marks. "He who saves his country does not violate any law." So his post on X didn't have like the Napoleon Bonaparte thing and didn't attribute it to him. It was just that. So look, when I see that, I don't like it. I'll be honest. I think Donald, I love everything he's doing. And then sometimes he turns around and just does dumb shit or says dumb stuff. And I'm like, why do that? Why do that? So I asked you guys, am I wrong for that? I said, President Trump posted this on social media. Do you agree with the statement? Yes, no, or I don't think he means it, Brandy. Nicole, yes, no, or I don't think he means it. Is this another case of we can't take him literally?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. I believe, I actually don't know the whole history behind the quote, but I assume that means like while you're at war, you're obviously breaking laws by killing people and whatnot, right? So you're not breaking, you're not violating laws when you're at war, right?
But you can violate laws at war. There's like,
well, those are war crimes, right? Those specific, yeah, like world. But I believe he's talking about his country, within the country. I don't know.
Well, it's probably in response to all these judges saying, you can't do this, you can't do this, or putting a hold on certain things. And he's saying, I can't violate the law or the Constitution because I'm saving, sure, our country, which is a ludicrous, ludicrous, right, thing to say. And in fact, our fairly conservative subscribers tend to agree.
Yeah.
Let's see. Over 50% say no on all of our subscription platforms right now. And he says, dumb statement, though I don't think he wrote it. Yeah, he didn't write it, but he quoted it, and then he wrote it without a quote. I don't know if there'd be as much of an uproar if he shared the Napoleon meme on X as well, instead of just regurgitating it without a quote. But the media would have still been in an uproar about it. I might feel slightly differently about it, but the sentiment is ridiculous. And again, why do you do this to yourself? Mm-hmm. Why do you do it to yourself? It's like, you're doing so great. Stop saying weird stuff. Don't bar the AP from the Oval Office. Like, you don't want to ever take things too far. You have so much to do that's good and proper. Let's focus on that. Let's save women's sports. Let's stop the mutilation of kids. Let's secure our border and all these things. Let's get rid of lawfare and the DOJ. Let's not use quotes from Napoleon to say that you have absolute power.
Again, everything has a purpose for him. I really believe there's always a strategy behind it. And what he's saying is that this is not a new concept where you push the envelope, right? So all the, you know, I hope that he's talking about like executive orders and getting them challenged and things like that. And you're fighting for the country. Yeah. So you're going to push the boundaries and see what goes. So.
Yeah. And there's some nuanced responses in here. Christine G says, our history is riddled with individuals who broke laws that saved our country. A better question is, should they be pardoned for their crimes? Ultimately, I think Trump means that if a law has to be broken to save the country, maybe it shouldn't have been a law. Joel.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, Joel.
I agree.
Well, who gets to decide, though, whether a law is worthy of breaking to save our country? Do we want Joe Biden out there breaking laws? Because in his estimation, what he's doing is saving the country. Presidents have different interpretations of what it means to
save the country. I'm pretty sure he has. And we just like are looking the other way.
We don't look the other way.
He pardoned his whole family so that for that purpose.
But there's not a law against this. That he's able to. Now, maybe there should be a law against it.
Yeah, no.
We didn't look. We don't look the other way. They look the other way.
They look the other way.
The broad we. Joel Locke, he says a lot of things that he doesn't mean. Unfortunately, we have to put up with him spouting off at the mouth. I'm glad he's elected, but we will have to put up with statements like this. Yeah, it doesn't. It's not like I see that and I'm like, regret my vote. No, I'm still bullish. Let me see. Shirley Lopez, I don't know, should have been an option. We stopped doing that. We took the I don't know away because I was told not to give people like you an out, Shirley. No, I have no idea what the context is that he's using this statement in. And I've long since stopped trying to read Donald Trump's mind or assume what his context is. But this is not a yes or a no. It's very nuanced because our Constitution has been misinterpreted so many times that following it now seems like breaking the law, and we've allowed too many unconstitutional laws to stand. The Constitution has to be our guiding star. It has to be. I mean, because without that, as a country, we would absolutely fall apart. Now, people have played fast and loose with the Constitution, like the Second Amendment here. I mean, the Second Amendment, Bob Ferguson's just wiped as you know what with it and thrown it down the toilet, flushed it down the toilet. So, yeah, I have an issue with that, though. And one of the reasons I defend the Second Amendment so firmly and so aggressively is I don't want the government to then play fast and loose with the First Amendment. So unless we're going to go out and, like, you know, do constitutional amendments or something, you got to leave the Constitution alone. I don't want anyone playing fast and loose with it. Okay, so that's an interesting. I love a good head scratcher. Donald Trump is always a head scratcher.
Oh, and that was the purpose, I'm pretty sure. Get them all riled up.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, we got a good
out of context.
Sanity check, but let's get to comments quick. Bill Biz, $20 super chat. It's always entertaining to see delusional morons like Banks who view themselves as intellectual and moral superiors. His email was really something. It really seemed like he wanted to convince us that he wasn't politically biased, that the charges were totally righteous, which I just have never seen a prosecutor go to those lengths. It was a very long email. Matthew Cook, $10 super chat. Brandy, fantastic and an inspiring speech at the parental rights rally in Olympia. To the WA Dems in Olympia, facts don't care about your feelings. Cheers. Yeah, and I apologize for those who came and we didn't get to stick around and talk to you. We had to leave. I had to get Mike back. My husband came with me and he had to be back. So we had to take off at 1 on the dot. So we didn't get to sit and chat with folks who'd come down there and stood in the pouring
rain.
And I
hope people just went home after everybody was done anyway, because it was so, cold.
It was so cold. It's always, whenever we go down there, it freaking rains.
I know. We got to do some
and
spring.
And then the unions are out there or whatever it is, and it's like bright and sunny and the anti-Trumpers or whatever it is. Did you ever pull that King 5 thing? Maybe we talk about that tomorrow. Let's save that for tomorrow because we're going a little long today. Kim Taylor, I want to be Tracy when I grow up. Wasn't Tracy awesome? Tracy
so
Abel, so good. How can you charge that woman with a felony? A jury's never going to convict her.
That hair, man.
Oh, she had beautiful hair. Yeah. Captain Cranky Pants, seeing these young kids take a stand does give me hope that not all is lost. I agree. We love Francis. Mm-hmm. Lee Richard, what amazes me is that not one feminist for women's rights is supporting or speaking up for these ladies in sports and locker rooms. There are women standing up, but they just don't call themselves feminists because, you know, they don't care. They're just doing what's right. But yeah, more people should be standing up. It's insane. Like I see on the Tumwater Union post, parents are like, screw you, basically. Like, stop pushing this agenda. So I'm like, overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Like, where are all you? Like, where are all you? Because I know that, I mean, in America, it's like an 85% issue, I think, the last polling, that no biological boys and men shouldn't be in girls' sports. So where are those people?
Well, they're just not getting the attention that they should be getting. The media is very clear. I mean, we were talking about this weekend, but the Olympian was pretty fair with their article on the parents' right rally and the parental rights rally. But the Seattle Times, to me, less so for sure, the way that it was phrased, because they just took the Democrats' excuse for going after all of these. Like, well, it would be confusing. It would be, we just want to,
so dumb.
We just passed it, but knowing it was going to be confusing. So we're just clarifying some things on the trans stuff and things like that. So no,
they're just stenographers for the left. They don't challenge what they tell them. Let me see. Art only. The California train project is worse run than Sound Transit. Dow says, hold my beer. Yeah, that there's no way that that can come to fruition. There's going to be so much blowback to that. But I know. But even when the far left, because Dow isn't a darling of the left.
But he made a deal.
I know.
There's a deal with the devil somewhere in there.
Like, it's not going to matter if I say it's cronyism. Mm-hmm. But the issue is when you have the far left, which dictates public policy in Seattle and King County, and they're saying that it's completely inappropriate, I think that's a little different. I don't see how they escape that. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but
They all pay the Sound Trans tab fee. I mean, the spending is outrageous.
Outrageous. Just to be over time, over budget, would never be allowed to be that big of a failure in the private sector. Dow can't balance a budget. Why would he be the Sound Transit CEO? Avgeek Joe, elect the Sound Transit Board. I agree. There has to be some elected positions in there because, or else it sets you up for this situation. Mm-hmm. Matthew, Sound Transit, the biggest criminal organization in American history. Quote from Dory Monson. Dory was all over Sound Transit. Can you imagine what he would say about this story? This would have been his whole show today.
He said, told you so.
It would have been 3 hours of his show today if he were still with us about Sound Transit. Let me see. Todd Welch, Sound Transit is currently looking to hire a DEI chief. Salary range, $140,000 to $400,000.
It's true. I looked it up.
$450,000?
I looked it up.
With a midpoint of $250,000. $450,000 for a DEI chief?
Mm-hmm. But doesn't they have to get federal funding?
I just give up.
So that's going to, if they do that and don't get rid of that,
I'm going to quit this job and be the DEI chief of Sound Transit. I can get a quarter mil?
Yeah.
To just tell people, like, you're white, you can't have a job?
Right.
that's the easiest
Pretty
job ever.
Pretty much the job.
God, I'm enjoying today's show.
It has been listed since December and not been filled. So maybe they're procrastinating filling because of this Trump thing, but.
Maybe. This has been such a good show. I don't want it to end.
Wild
All good stuff. Things must come to an end. And we have that interview that we're taping after this. Yeah. So I got to get out like relatively on time. All right. Is your retirement Thank you, Nicole. Mm-hmm. Is your retirement portfolio running efficiently? Is there waste that you don't know about? Are you needlessly exposed to too much risk? So it's time to make your retirement portfolio great again. Join Zach Abraham for his free webinar Thursday, March 20th. So Thursday, March 20th, 3:30 p.m. It's virtual, free to sign up. So get it on your calendar right now. Zach is going to talk about the first 100 days of 2025. So during the webinar, he's going to cover all the rapid changes that are happening at the national level, how they might impact your retirement portfolios. He'll do a long-term outlook through 2025. Plus, he'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible so you can run your retirement through a Department of Retirement Efficiency. I like that. Yes, Zach is the Department of Government Department of Retirement Efficiency. And then don't miss my weekly show. It's going to be posted on Wednesday, second episode of Doge Watch with Zach Abraham. Anyway, so their next webinar coming up Thursday, March 20th, 3:30 p.m. Sign up, first 100 days. Register right now, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, we have a wonderful closing sanity check for you. Let's get to it. So we had the parental rights rally in Olympia, and there were a lot of good speakers that had a lot of different perspectives. I want to play part of a speech given by Representative Michelle Caldier. So she was talking about just how nutty our public schools have gotten. And when she shared this story about something that happened within her family, the whole crowd is like, oh, that's crazy. So Nicole's like, we've got to play that for sanity check. So here it is, Representative Michelle Caldier.
I have an 11-year-old granddaughter. And we had a Holocaust bill. And I thought, why do we need the Holocaust bill to teach education about the Holocaust in schools? Don't they teach that? I learned about Anne Frank, right? Didn't we all learn about the Holocaust in school? So I called my granddaughter and I said, hey, sweetie, do you know what the Holocaust is? And she said, what's that, Grandma? And you got to realize she is an avid reader, very intelligent. And I said, have you ever heard of Anne Frank? And you know what she said? She said, is that one of your friends?
Well, sort of.
It's sad. And yet she knows what pronouns are. She told me that if you do not acknowledge pronouns, that she learned this in school, that you're a homophobe. That is what they're teaching the kids.
Teach the kids pronouns, can't teach them about Anne Frank. Real bang-up job our public school system is doing. That has been our sanity check for today. If you thought today's episode was good, you just wait for the rest of the week. We got so much good content lined up for you. So if you've not signed up to support our show already, that's how we do it. We do it with subscribers who are giving us $5 of their hard-earned money every month so we can continue to push out this content for you. So sign up, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. What else? Nothing? That's it? What else could we have? We've covered everything.
Yeah.
One of the best shows I think we've ever done. Real banger. I'll see you tomorrow on the live show at noon.